Perkins Media proudly presents Moms Across America, a program where women can speak their minds openly and freely without fear of reprisal. Moms Across America is about the issues of the day confronting America from a mom's point of view. And now, here are the moms.
Welcome to Moms Across America. I'm your host today, Anne Ubellis, and along with me is our producer and co-host, Dan Perkins. Vicki, unfortunately, is unable to join us, and hopefully we'll see her loving face next week. But Moms Across America, it's important that you know what your rights are and what the laws are. So we offer and ask you to go to ashbrook.com/constitution and get your copy of the Constitution. It's important to know what your rights are in the First and Second Amendment, but not just that, but the entire document, to find out where government is overstretching themselves and where we have to reclaim our original freedoms guaranteed by our founding fathers. So again, go to ashbrook.com/constitution. Get your copy and share it today. We got a lot to talk about, Dan. Oh man, it's like the news is hitting us a mile a minute right now. And one of the things you brought to my attention is what's going on in Minnesota. You want to tell us what's going on over there?
The Justice Department and the FBI did an investigation to a fraudulent activity performed by, Annie tells me this morning, 70 people have been indicted. They stole $250 million. I say that again. They embezzled from the federal government $250 million out of the food program for children. And they spent the $250 million not on buying food or distributing food, but on cars and houses and vacations. And they still didn't spend it all. So the idea that we have one state, the state of Minnesota, that $250 million was embezzled from the government, you have to ask the question, well, how much in other states was taken away? How big was this opportunity that these people figured out? Was it duplicated in other states? And that's going to take some time to go through all the records. But the idea that they were able to get money, and I think it was from the Department of Agriculture for the SNAP program.
Yep.
And they got the Biden administration put in some waivers that apparently opened the door to allow these people to walk in and just steal money like crazy. And they falsified documents, the number of children that they served, the number of meals that they've given out, the locations of where they were distributed from, all of which was false, was never there. But the government kept sending them checks up to $250 million. Amazing. Just absolutely amazing.
Multiply that by 50 states, plus not only that, the outside territories that we have, that we also serve through the Department of Agriculture. In the state of Minnesota alone, of the 70 that have been indicted, 38 have already pleaded guilty. So the evidence must be a preponderance of it. And again, if it's that easy to do in one state, you can guarantee that there's someone in every state and every territory that has already figured out the loophole in this plan. And it's not just in the SNAP program, but if we start to look at all the other programs that had waivers in them during COVID, and we're probably talking about in trillions of dollars when we come down to the final investigation.
I think amazing. First of all, if Biden was still president, the FBI wouldn't have discovered that. That's one thing for sure. And the fact that the FBI and the Justice Department, whenever absolutely possible, is trying to be transparent and providing information. I mean, there was another story about its transparency that the Justice Department released 100,000 documents on the Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, and Robert F. Kennedy assassinations. 100,000 documents? They weren't in somebody's desk drawer. Apparently, nobody knew anything about them. So that the deep state is really trying to keep things quiet so the American people don't know what's really going on. And the fact that you had administrators in the Department of Agriculture and the SNAP program who were allowing these people to apply for and get $250 million in grants for programs and the reporting mechanisms, nobody did an audit, nobody checked it somewhere Maybe you should have checked it at $100 million. I mean, maybe that's way too high. Maybe it's something less. But there should have been some kind of oversight instead of letting it run to 250, in my opinion, let it run to $250 million.
It's also, there should have been a trigger mechanism that said, hey, we need verifiable proof that this is the services that you're giving, verifiable proof that these are the people that you are serving. In order to get it on an airplane, you've got to go through 15 different checks. But yet you can get money from the government for free with no background check, nothing. Just even
And I
verify
think,
whether or not they're in the United States. Now, the question is, we know what happened with our states here, or at least one state out of 50. What about having a foreign entity reaching out and saying, hey, we can go into the federal government, claim that we're servicing these people, even though we may be in, say, I don't know, Estonia, and still go into this program and steal money? We need checks and balances on these bureaucracies, and this is where the deep state lives. They will do anything and everything to blur the lines that you never get the answer that you want, and yet they will stay permanently entrenched in that position to the end of their career.
And it's I look at it from a scale. If the state of Minnesota was embezzled $250 million in this program, what about states like New York and California? Much bigger states, much bigger population, probably hundreds of billions of dollars spent during COVID. How much corruption was there in COVID there? And I think that when the people of Minnesota, the average everyday people see that these 70 people stole 250 million, and really it's 250 million of their dollars. It's their money that's coming in for tax revenue. They're spending 250 million and getting nothing for it, and at the same time, they're also providing all these services for the illegal aliens that are in the country. That's even more money. Imagine what the scale of the theft must be in bigger states with greater populations and higher populations of illegal immigrants. It must be astronomical.
This is what we know of. It'd be amazing what we're going to find out once we do a thorough investigation. Because I'm sure the DOJ is looking, well, this happened in one state. And they're going to look at it and go, oh, wait a minute, how many other states have, had the same issue?
You would hope that somebody in the Trump administration is asking that very question, because it's the question that needs to be asked. And we have to find out to the extent of corruption. I mean, we had last week, I can't believe it took so long and so much time and such a huge amount of rhetoric. The Democrats were objecting to the Republicans cutting $9 billion out of the budgets of NPR and the budgets, and basically cutting them back to the point where there wasn't much money for television or radio in the public sector budgets from the federal government. But $9 billion, they spent an awful lot of time fussing over the $9 billion. And now they're saying the former head of NPR says she thinks it was a good thing to get rid of the government subsidy, because the news on NPR was biased and needed to be corrected. And the idea that people should know what's going on and what they're spending, and I think when we're talking $6-7 trillion in an operating budget for this country, you can't even fathom where the money's going, where we're spending $6 trillion, and why we're $36 trillion in debt. What happened? We know that a lot of a significant portion of that debt came under Biden and the various programs he put in place, which were lies to the American people. The same thing true with Obama, and the famous shovel-ready jobs that were not shovel-ready. And most of the money went to the unions and to the benefactors of the Democratic Party. So we're looking at, are we, I should ask the question, are we looking at a fundamental change in the American citizens and their desire to want to hold the government accountable for how they spend our money?
Well, you got a split here because you got the people that are living off of the government, and this is their life. Their life wouldn't exist unless there was some sort of a government subsidy, whether it's Section 8 housing, Medicaid, welfare, whatever. We have created this nation into a welfare state. And if we can reimagine our society now, where our founders thought we would be self-sufficient individuals and not individuals that are wards of the state. And that's the mindset we must set. And once we do that, then we can reclaim our country and bring us back to the founding principles in the original documents and what our founders hoped for us to have.
But do you think that the American people want that to happen?
I think there's an awakening. I think there is a true awakening because those of us that are working really hard and participating in our society and paying our taxes. When we see them being abused by someone else that's too lazy to get off their butt and actually get a job, we have a problem with that. When we see our money going to foolish things like drag queen story time for pre-kindergartners, I'm sorry, I've got a problem with that. When we see our money being spent foolishly and mindlessly and not even safeguarding it where it's being stolen, such as in the case in Minnesota. We have a problem with that. There is an awakening in America, and I think we're on the path to reclaim our founding principles, as in the Constitution that you can
Right.
get from ashbrook.org/constitution. Back
Nice
the way through
segue to a commercial
that
again. That was very well done.
in.
So when you look at what's going on, and you look at all of this disclosure, this increase in transparency, or in reality, focusing on transparency in general, all came in the last 180 days.
In the last 6 months.
Last 6 months because of Donald Trump. And
Exactly.
there's a feeling that there's a lot more to come.
Oh
And
boy, yeah.
yeah, and I think that is America, question is, America ready for this? You know, there's a beginning to be not a significant amount, but people are questioning about what ICE is doing and who they're arresting and where they're arresting them, and the mayors of sanctuary cities and governors of sanctuary states are opposed to this. Where do you think that government interference is going to, where will that end up, do you think?
I think again, there'll be an awakening of Americans because what we're seeing is we're seeing our neighbors, our relatives who are members of these law enforcement agencies being attacked. And that's going to hit really hard at the heart of America. They're using these words like Nazis and fascists and saying concentration camps for the detention centers. And when they realize what is truly going on and the men and women that are doing this job, are parts of their family, are their neighborhood, their friends, the hardworking people. And not only they're in peril, but their families are placed in peril.
It's something that we should encourage our people to follow, what's going on in Minnesota and what's happening in Congress about appropriations. And how can we hear you on your Friday show?
It's very easy. You can go to southernsense.net and click on the link there with the has the shows you can go into the archives or catch me on Fridays 2:30 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on X, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and everywhere else.
Okay, we'll be right back with Annie after these messages. A Trilogy Plus One by Dan Perkins, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile.
Dan, you owe me a good night's sleep, and I'm really aggravated about it. I read your books, The Brotherhood of the Red Nile. And I got to tell you, I no longer have to take any no-dos or anything like that when I want to stay awake. I just think about the plots of your books. They are absolutely frightening, devastating, in fact, but some of the best reads I've ever had. And I urge everyone to take a look at it. It's a plausible scenario and one that every American should be absolutely aware of.
Available at Amazon.com.
Welcome back again to Moms Across America. I'm your host today, Ann Ubellis, along with my producer and co-host Dan Perkins. And Vicki Tonkins would not be with us today, but fingers crossed, she'll be back with us next week. Even more things to talk about. I mean, it's hitting us like kids throwing mud pies at a pool party. But we early mentioned this Russia hoax, and it's being proven to be false against President Trump. And this actually happened to have been cost the taxpayers $40 million in a year-long investigation by Mueller, claiming that Russia was in collusion with Donald Trump to obtain the election. It's gone so far under that investigation that occurred under the Biden administration that it was not an attack just against President Trump, but it was against his family. Senior members of his team were investigated, and even some, if you remember, were actually arrested and jailed. And it increased the tensions between the United States and Russia. And the list really goes on about all the consequences of it and what happened. And now it's being blown up. And it's Tulsi Gabbard says she has proof that it was orchestrated by former President Obama. So the question is this an act of treason? Is there truth to this investigation? Will it go to trial, and where it will go to trial? We got a lot of questions to ask and seek answers here, Dan.
I would say that is an interesting little twist, which I literally just thought about as you were speaking. The court of jurisdiction for this would be the U.S. District Court, and the prosecuting attorney for the district of was just sworn in, and that was Jeanine Pirro, formerly of the five, formerly a judge, formerly a prosecutor. But what's going on here is we have a situation where, based on what, and I haven't been able to read all 100 documents, but we're talking about documents that were in the possession of the Obama and Biden White House that were never made available to either Trump one or Trump two enter into the White House. She discovered them through a search of records files. So what we're talking about is we're talking about documents that primarily came from what is called the presidential briefing report. Each day, the president is given the opportunity to have a briefing on what's going on in the world, what's going on in the country, so that he or she can be up to date. The vice president also gets a briefing. And so what happened is that the president was getting briefings, and towards the end of his presidency, the internal staff of the NSA and other agencies wrote a report assessing the viability and the accuracy of the report of the file that was used to get FISA warrants from the FISA court, from the Steele dossier. And the conclusion from all of the various department heads into after further investigation, there was no truth, there was no evidence that one vote was changed, that one voting precinct was ever broken into, that the Russians did not have a strategy or a plan to disrupt the election in favor of Donald Trump. The story goes now that there is a paper where Barack Obama, in the waning days of his presidency after Donald Trump had been elected, went to his national security team Brennan and Company and said, this is unacceptable. So they, not the staff, they went back and rewrote the document to more of the liking of the president, that there was collusion on the part of Trump and the Russians. And that became the basis for Mueller to be established. And so what's happened is that over the years, the belief in that the ability for Donald Trump and his team to cooperate with the Russians and seek the Russians' help to win the election over Joe Biden was a false narrative. And I think that there are very few people in the country before the release of these documents last Friday who didn't believe that it was a hoax, that it was a lie, was a misconception. And the American the American electorate was misled by both the Obama and Biden administration. Now, what came out on Friday was to say, well, yes, it was false, but it was manipulated by Barack Obama, instructing Brennan and Comey and others to rewrite the report to a report that he would like for what he was trying to do. Now, he left office, but the report is saying that there are letters and communications between him and his team that remained in office under Trump that created a situation where they were in a position to try and bring about a coup against Donald Trump and have him removed from office through impeachment, create a new election. And so what happened was that those documents were sequestered, like many other documents that we're seeing from Tulsi that have been hidden away. They released this week 100,000 documents from the Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. assassinations that were never seen before. So we don't really know how much the FBI and the Justice Department has held secret and where it is, but slowly it's coming out. My concern is that she believes that based on the evidence that she has, based on the presidential documents that were the evidence for her to draw her conclusion, that Barack Obama and perhaps some of his other people are responsible or are chargeable for treason. And she believed she had enough evidence that she sent all of the documents to the Justice Department to open up an investigation to see whether or not President Obama and perhaps President Biden actually operated in an unconstitutional manner, created the crime of treason. That's never been said before about either a retired or sitting president of the United States. Never. We can also say never was a president indicted by 5 grand juries all over the United States and convicted in one in New York on 34 counts of felony. In my opinion, Andy, the door was opened by the Democrats and what they did. And now it comes down to one question in my mind, and I'd love to have your answer. We have Comey, Brennan, Rice,
and Clapper.
Clapper, and other people, and President Barack Obama. If they're guilty of treason, should they go to jail?
I actually checked my constitution as we were talking. I found that you cannot impeach because they're no longer in office, but they can be tried in cases of treason. They will not be put to death, believe it or not. It says Congress shall have the power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attender of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person detained. So, yeah, they could be jailed definitely for life. For the other crimes, they have to be tried in the court in which the crimes occurred, which now would be the District of Columbia.
Right.
Now, the fact that Obama is no longer at that time residing in Washington, D.C., what state was he residing in? He's got houses in Hawaii, I think one up in Maine or something like that.
Martha's Vineyard.
if he was committing these crimes while in that state, using, say, the internet or the telephone, he can be tried in that state also. So
let's
a lot of questions of where you would try them, but should they be placed in prison for life? I would say if they committed treason against, they attempted a coup against a sitting president by falsifying documents, that's perjury, that's forgery. Those also are felonies. In order to remove a sitting president, that's coup against the nation.
Yes. And the point is, if it's the right thing to do, does that mean that you think that the American people would support it or not?
If the person that voted for Obama and Biden felt that they were betrayed by them by committing a crime against the nation, you're going to have a lot of disenfranchised voters. The Democrats are already bleeding voters. When you have a large group of 18 to 28-year-olds that are voting for Trump that formerly were voting for Obama, there's a shift in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And the largest shift is young men right now, because they feel their masculinity is under attack, and they're saying, wait a minute, we're looking on the other side of the fence, and they're embracing us. They're accepting us for who we are. And that's what we do. We accept you for whoever you are. But they're finding now that the very things, the freedoms and liberties that our nation has, that no other nation has, are being taken away. And you're voting for someone who's going to suppress us and now be a traitor to us, mislead us, deceive us, and you want us to support you? I don't think so.
So we got 2 minutes. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying. So the question that I have to finish up with here then is, what happens to the Democratic Party if their former president is indicted and tried for treason?
You know, ironically, this new party that Elon Musk is putting against, Elon, was it America First or something like that?
Yeah.
They may find a home there, or they may decide to join the Republican side. They may even stay independent. So you may find the Democratic Party starting to split. We're looking at the people in the Republican Party saying, well, we're going to see what Elon Musk comes up with. He's challenging us here. I see a challenge also on the Democratic side. I was reading an article, I believe, out of Newsmax earlier today. It did not print out. It was actually from the New York Times today. And here they were saying there was a break in the Democratic Party. What they supported in the 80s, they're not seeing here in 2025. Mm-hmm. They're seeing a change in the party, and now they're floundering. And the more the Democratic Party goes left, the more they lose people. And so they may go to independent, Elon Musk, and maybe we may find a large portion going to us as Republicans.
Do you think, though, that the America could stand a treason trial for a former president?
It will split the nation, I'll tell you that. It will be one of our most darkest times, but the truth must come out. And I think once we come out the other side of that tunnel, we're going to see a lot of light.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with part 3 after these messages.
Perkins, the author of Sad Eyes, Book 2. In Book 1, we watch her grow up and develop into an intelligent, practical, and beautiful woman. She knows what she wants to be, and she will not let anything happen that will stop her from reaching her goal. Book 2 has many challenges she faces during World War II. People say it's hard to put down. You can get Sad Eyes Book 2 at Amazon.com or JanCarrollPublishing.com and ask at Jan Carroll for a special deal if you buy both books.
By committing a crime against the nation, you're going to have a lot of disenfranchised voters. The Democrats are already bleeding voters. When you have a large group of 18 to 28-year-olds that are voting for Trump that formerly were voting for Obama, there's a shift in the nation. And the largest shift is young men right now, because they feel their masculinity is under attack. And they're saying, wait a minute, we're looking on the other side of the fence, and they're embracing us. They're accepting us for who we are. And that's what we do. We accept you for whoever you are. But they're finding now that the very things, the freedoms and liberties that our nation has, that no other nation has, are being taken away. And you're voting for someone who's going to suppress us and now be a traitor to us, mislead us, deceive us, and you want us to support you? I don't think so.
So we got 2 minutes. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying. So the question that I have to finish up with here then is, what happens to the Democratic Party if their former president is indicted and tried for treason?
You know, ironically, this new party that Elon Musk is putting against, Elon, was it America First or something like that? They may find a home there, or they may decide to join the Republican side. They may even stay independent. So you may find the Democratic Party starting to split. We're looking at the people in the Republican Party saying, well, we're going to see what Elon Musk comes up with. He's challenging us here. I see a challenge also on the Democratic side. I was reading an article, I believe, out of Newsmax earlier today. It did not print out. It was actually from the New York Times today. And here they were saying there was a break in the Democratic Party. What they supported in the 80s, they're not seeing here in 2025. Mm-hmm. They're seeing a change in the party, and now they're floundering. And the more the Democratic Party goes left, the more they lose people. And so they may go to independent Elon Musk, and maybe we may find a large portion going to us as Republicans.
Do you think, though, that the America could stand a treason trial for a former president?
It will split the nation, I'll tell you that. It will be one of our most darkest times, but the truth must come out. And I think once we come out the other side of that tunnel, we're going to see a lot of light.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with part three after these messages.
We had been talking earlier about our school districts and education, and Moms Across America, this is the heart of our family right here. How our children learn and what they learn and where they learn is extremely, extremely important. And unfortunately, because of the government federal programs, we give our kids over to the school district. They take them over, teach them whatever they want. We have a a state in New Jersey that wants to pass a new law mandating that the previous programs that we've been able to remove, the DEI, the climate change, the LGBTQ plus programs that we said, no, these are things that only should not be taught in school. Teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, the things, the tools that we need to make our kids smart, be able to go out into the community, be productive, get jobs, start their own families. These things were not being taught in school, and now we're moving them back. And yet there's still a faction that wants to take it all the way back over to what we just got rid of, what Trump is doing with the government programs. I'm sorry, I'm having a few brain farts here. But now there is, Dan, you were talking about the schools in Arizona that, because of homeschooling, charter schooling, traditional schooling through religious institutions or other institutions, moving back to classical education is taking root, and families are taking the kids out. Many states are now starting voucher programs so that that tax funds that normally would go back into a school district goes directly to the student. We're finding it's making a huge shift in public education.
We had Sam on this show, and you had her on your show. Sam Sorbo, who's written the book on homeschooling, and not too long ago, she was on our show. We were talking about the education system and don't send your kids to public schools and find alternative forms of education. There's this one, Arizona passed a law making the voucher program legal in the state of Arizona. Now, New Mexico is looking at a similar law. Texas, the governor there says he's going to sign a bill which is similar to what's going on in Arizona. And I think it's either New Hampshire or Vermont is doing the same thing. What I see going on is parents have decided that they want to take control of the school system where their children are going. And these initiatives to move the power into the hands of the parents by tagging the money to the child, so that if a child leaves a school And in one particular school district in Arizona, they lost $20 million in funding, which went with the two students to the alternatives, whether it was a private school, a charter school, or homeschooling. That's $7,000 per student went with them and came out of the budget of the school. And now they're struggling to figure out how they're going to pay for the services and the employees in the remainders of the students that are in the school. And they're looking at they're going to have to cut programs and cut teacher staff and perhaps custodial staff. But it's a reaction to giving the parents the freedom and the right to choose how they want their children educated and what they want their children to learn. As you said a few moments ago, there's a groundswell that we are not educating our children to be productive units in our society because they can't read, spell, write, or do math. And I think the number that I saw that was part of the driving force for this legislation to pass in Arizona were the standardized testing scores, where less than a third of all students that were tested on grade level. Now, I know your school districts in South Carolina are one of the top three that are actually on level, but 3 out of 50 ain't good. It's good for your kids, but isn't good in general. And I can remember when we were commuting back from New Jersey to the North Myrtle Beach every summer for our summer vacation, reading stories about how poor the education was in South Carolina, and it was in the bottom half or third or quarter or last, but it's all turned around. So I think it's a situation where we've got one state for sure, two that are on the verge of signing, and another one. So before, I suspect that this trend of wanting to be accountable for the tax dollars that are being spent and the quality of education that the children are receiving, and monitoring and measuring their test results to see how effective the teachers are in teaching the core curriculum. All good, at least in my opinion.
Well, if we look at actually what you do is you break down where the money goes per student. And you'll find in areas such as Arizona, you have more money going not into the classroom, but to everything else. And what we did here is we brought the money back into the classroom. And yes, to the point where we're actually building new school buildings, we were able to turn around and not raise the tax dollars, but we found a way. Really smart way to raise bonds. And investors would come in and make money off the bonds, and the school district was not taxing, and we'd get new buildings and repairs done. When we place more of the tax dollars into the student, you get a productive student because the student's going to be there to learn. And if you turn around and take out all these wokeisms out of the classroom, go back to traditional schooling, reading, writing, arithmetic, your social studies, and things like that. Do the mechanics like shop or economics or something like that. Teach them secretarial or the economy. Teach them to think, to be creative and constructive thinking. That's been taken away by the federal government because you have these specialty programs, these touchy-feely programs. Give the kids the knowledge that they need. Bring back, actually, we have most teachers are now female. Bring back an equal portion, male and female, because kids growing up need male figures as well as female figures. But they need to see the difference and decide which path they're going to take. We did that without putting in all these touchy-feely programs. There is a way to do this, but we have a stranglehold by the teachers' unions. And when less money goes into the classrooms, more goes into their pocket and into their unions. And now the unions are screaming because you've got schools in Arizona, and we were talking about this in Chicago, that are empty. You have one school, I think we talked about, had 28 students and
The high school that
29.
was built for 4,000 students.
Yeah, and 28 students, and you have staff in there. For what? For what? 28 kids? You can't transfer them to somewhere else and close the building and save the taxpayer money. But you don't have that thinking on the left. But you do have it on the right. And that's what we're doing. We're reclaiming the education and reclaiming the safety and sanity of our kids. Why is it we have a higher rate of suicide in young kids, depression, anxiety? Because they're not being taught to interact with each other. The parents have abrogated their responsibility to the government. They need to take that power back. Say, this is my child. I'm responsible for that child. This is what I want you to teach. And this is how I want to raise my child. We got to get government out of the family and bring the kids back home and back into their community. So the community controls the education, not the federal government. And even the state must release a lot of their grip. And allow the local community to say, this is what we're going to teach because it's good for our community. It will help our community prosper and grow. And that child will be a prosperous member of our community. And maybe to the nation one day. You never know.
Well, we have a situation right now where the income and the requirements, a lot of the requirements for our school system came out of the Department of Education. And the Supreme Court ruled last week that Mr. Trump can fire a lot of the staff at the Department of Education. And if he wants to dissolve it and send it out to the states, I'm curious what your reaction to, I understand where we would cut the overhead of the government. But if we really want parents in control of the local school board, do we really need a Department of Education?
If anything, it would be something like a shadow just to help make sure funds go in the right direction. But I don't see a real need for it. I mean, it was put in place in the 1970s, and I was fortunate because it really didn't start to affect my school district at that time. It's now kids graduating after 1980, when the federal government had full control nationwide, that the grades started to fail. That the kids were not coming up to the grade level necessary, and they were using a curve to try to push them through and graduate them. We were doing it just fine before the Department of Education existed. So maybe my thinking should be, if anything, it's only a shadow figure that just, I don't know, maybe we don't even need it anymore.
Well, I'm curious. Jimmy Carter was the one who established the Department of Education.
Oh, yeah.
What did we do before that for hundreds of years?
It was local. State and local. It was the local community. And usually the community would be the one saying, we want to hire this person as our teacher. It used to be you had to go before your county council or city hall or whatever. It used to be the community would say, yeah, this is what we want. This is our values in our community. This is what we want to see taught and done. Classical education needs to come back. Critical thinking needs to come back into the classroom and be taught instead of this indoctrination that we have. And that's the problem. We're indoctrinating our kids and they're not being allowed to think creatively, think on their own. They're being told, you will think this, you will be that. No, let the child flower and grow, but teach them just the basics that they need and let them take their own path.
But if you do that, you take a significant power away from the Democratic Party. And that is, as you use the word indoctrination, which I think is appropriate, if they're no longer in a position to indoctrinate because they're not teaching any of that subject matter, what happens to the value of the union and the power of the unions?
Maybe it's time for the Democratic Party to reinvent themselves into what they originally were, say, 50 or 75 years ago. Not the monster that they have become.
Yeah.
They're not the Democratic Party of our parents.
In order for your school districts to get a very high rating, what do you know what took place that caused what fundamentally changed? Did they teach the test? What did they do?
Well, first off, we had a school superintendent locally. We finally got rid of the bad ones and finally found us a real gem, a wonderful person. Matter of fact, Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Air Force, retired, took over, and with military precision, he changed our school district. But statewide, we also had the new state superintendent change that person and then put the mandate by the people into what we want to see in our school district. When the the local citizens spoke to their school board, and the school board then went states. They said, this is what our community wants. And we went from the grassroots up, and we changed.
Was there a lot of pushback?
At first, yeah, at first. I mean, I sat before a school board meeting with a very liberal school superintendent, and I had to sign because they wanted to make one of the individuals have like a three-quarter vote instead of a full vote. And I said, this is not Common Core math. He wasn't happy. Gave him my business card, and he tossed it in the air like it was a piece of garbage. And I laughed, and I said, hey, I made my point. And we had a lot of supporters. And when we were able to get rid of him, we were able to turn around also statewide do it. And then up on the state level. We, the people, took our education back.
We are out of time in a segment. We're going to take a break and we'll be back for the wrap up. We'll be right back after these messages. That sound of the emergency squad happens 34 times per hour, 24/7 in the United States, carrying someone who's dying from a drug overdose to the ER. 70% of these runs are people who are dying from the vicious drug called fentanyl. Over the last 10 years, 1 million Americans have died from fentanyl. In 2019, 112,000 children ages 12 and 13 were on opioids. The fentanyl overdose rates are rising 2.5 times faster than that of heroin. Now there is an FDA-approved test for the presence of fentanyl in the system. The test is safe, simple, and 99.5% accurate. In just 5 minutes, you can find out if your child, loved one, or employee is using fentanyl. If you want to save someone's life, go to thefentanyltest.com and learn more about this dangerous drug and how you can get your 5-minute test and keep your child out of that squad.
All right, this is our final wrap-up session of Moms Across America. Again, I'm your host, Ann Ubelles. Today, Miss Vicky took the day off, along with my co-host, Dan Perkins, and producer of the show. And once again, moms, want to remind you, just remember to go ashbrook.com/constitution, because this is what we're talking about, our constitutional rights and what we, the people, can do to reclaim our communities, our state, and our nation. But we had a lot we were talking about, and I got to come back and remember what we were doing. We were talking about so many different things.
By talking about the Department of Justice and the FBI finding $250 million of fraud in Minnesota in the SNAP program during the pandemic.
Well, when we were talking about that, it came across my mind that there was major scandal going on that prisoners with access to the internet were causing fraud through Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP programs, a lot of other things. Our federal government, it has a back door, unfortunately, and the criminals find it and they abuse it. And that's why we need someone like Kash Patel in there, someone like Tulsi Gabbard, Pam Bondi. We need them to go in and pull out the root causes of all this and tighten the loopholes so that when our tax dollars go out into these programs, they are spent wisely and judiciously. And maybe we can cut that deficit by quite a few dollars.
Let me just insert a question for you about the personalities. What do you think about the dust-up between Patel, Bongino, and Pam Bondi over the Epstein problem?
Well, I've interviewed Dan Bongino, and when he had his own show in New York, he would have me come on because I was a Tea Party person, still am, 15 years later, still running it, 16 actually, forgive me. Someone has to turn around and sit the three of them down and say, hey, listen, this is what's going to happen. You either shake hands and play well, or one of you is going to end up with a big red face. And when you walk out the door, that's it. That'd be bye. And we'll put someone in there that's willing to be a team player. One of the things Trump did in his first administration, and I screamed and yelled at the TV when we saw him doing this, he didn't replace the deep state people, you know, Mueller, Clapper, Comey, and so on. He didn't do what Ronald Reagan did, clean out house and start new. This time around, he learned and he watched those 4 years while he was still being attacked. But when Trump came in, he cleaned house and he did that for a reason. We're seeing the result with right here with Tulsi Gabbard right there. We're seeing the exposure of what was going on with the deep state, with the fake Russia hoax, because he is going in and cleaning house. And between the three of them, someone's got to sit him down and say either play nice or exit.
So when you look at the corruption in Minnesota, and we talked about it was $250 million with 70 people involved in Minnesota, what must it be in the other 49 states?
And you mentioned earlier some of the liberal states where people would not be checking at all. They couldn't care less. I'm saying this is probably in the trillions of dollars when you get down to it. In one state times 50, you may have a state that's semi-clean if you have a good attorney general in place, able to help monitor these programs to make sure abuse is not happening. So you still will find it, but it may not be as aggressive as we see in the state of Minnesota, the state of Tampon Tim. So you know, that speaks a lot. But I hope that they do look into all 50 states and territories, as well as any foreign entity that may have invaded the system illegally.
We had that discussion a few minutes ago. You made a comment in passing that I would want to come back to you. You talked about foreign governments. I'm wondering about the implication of what we had with the NGOs, because they were so entrenched in going on what was happening in immigration. I wonder if there were NGOs involved in trying to get money and manipulate money for food and other things in the COVID situation that they embezzled out of the government.
Oh. This opens up a whole new 3-hour show. You start going into this. A matter of fact, there is a bill that is being proposed that to go after those backing these systems, either it's through the protest or through this fraud, and prosecuting the people that are instigating it, such as the NGOs. We saw the NGOs abuse the immigration system when these illegals came in, and they got boku bucks per person, per body that brought in. Right. So massive fraud. And this is where we go. We see one agency right here through the Department of Agriculture. But how many other agencies have also been invaded, either by domestically by people here abusing the system or stealing outright, or a foreign entity trying to interfere? Matter of fact, there was a news item just recently that it was the state of Arizona had their electoral system hacked just a few days ago, that someone went in and was trying to manipulate the votes. Fortunately, they caught it real fast. And I'm trying to remember if the hacker was Iran, I think. I forget, that could be incorrect. But this just occurred just this few past month. Our government systems are wide open to attack. And this is what we also have to find a way to protect ourselves through cybersecurity, as well as legal authority to investigate abuse and fraud.
Now, our second segment dealt with the difficult challenge of getting our head around the idea that Tulsi Gabbard released 100 documents and is talking about perhaps thousands more, which were based on presidential briefings that she contends that Barack Obama committed treason, not only while he was in his remaining days as president, but after he became a private citizen, because he was still manipulating his operatives that were still working in the administration. And I look at that and I say, is America ready to have a former president and possibly two, and maybe a former first lady, secretary of state, indicted on treason in the United States?
When a president steps down from power in the United States here, everything that he does, you know, that's it. He has no more authority within the government. Unfortunately, when when Biden was elected, see, Freudian slip, a lot of us here on the right was saying that it's a puppet presidency, that Obama will always be manipulating what's going on. Right. You know, this is what we were thinking at the time that Biden was elected. And maybe we suspected something that is now being proven to be true. And if it is, and if that Obama was behind the Russia hoax and the attempt to remove Trump from power, the impeachments that went on, members of his staff being jailed, homes being raided, his family being harassed, also threatened by Obama and his cronies. We have to stop that. We have to be able to know that when we elect a new president, there's no other influence behind them, be it foreign or domestic, that he will
Yeah,
be elected to enact the voice of the people and not someone else, for a puppet presidency.
but the here's the problem that I have, not with what you're saying in just in general. The problem that I have is, up until last Friday, you and I and others of our contemporaries believed Barack Obama had undue influence over Biden and his administration. We believed it, but had no proof. Friday, we got proof. That changes the whole equation. It makes me nervous. The documents that Tulsi was using were his documents that were hidden from Donald Trump when he took over after from President Obama, and were discovered by Tulsi after Biden administration because the documents were hidden. And so I'm nervous because I'm concerned about the fact that what we now have, and what appears to be proof of what we suspected but could never prove, but now we can. How do we live with that?
It has to be exposed, but we've got to be, you got to watch what's happening right now. Everyone right now is clamoring for the everything to be let go on Epstein. They're using that to hush down this, but we have to turn around and say, that's the apple, that's the orange. Two different things, and they both need to be exposed and aired out equally so the people know that their nation is secure. That when they go to the voting booth, their vote is secure, and their will, the will of the American people, be elected into office to enact what we ask them to do. If we have a puppet presidency, that has to be exposed, and that has to be prevented for any future president. We have to stick to the Constitution, and that's why we tell everyone, go out and get your own constitution at ashbrook.org/constitution. Know what we're talking about, the separation of powers, the act of treason. And this is what it is. If this is actually true, that what Tulsi Gabbard is coming forward with, this was an attempted coup after a sitting president. We can't allow that. And it must be stopped. We must know that we're secure domestically as well as in foreign.
Right. Our last segment dealt with a problem that Arizona's having, specifically the school districts, because the state legislature passed and the governor signed a bill for vouchers. And the voucher amount is $7,000. And one school district alone lost $20 million of funding from students because the parents took the child out of the school and either moved them to a private school or a charter school or decided to do homeschooling. And we now know that New Mexico is looking at it. Governor Abbott of Texas says he has a bill he's going to sign. And I believe it's, I'm not sure whether it's Vermont or New Hampshire, but one of those New England states has decided they're going to do the same thing. We were fortunate enough that we had Sam Sorbo on a few weeks ago, talking about homeschooling and the quality of education. And your school districts are rated in some of the best in the country. We're going to see another revolution in our education system, it appears.
We are seeing the free market economy. That's it. They finally figured out the free market economy works. You give the dollars back to the parent, and the parent says, well, I want to spend this wisely, and my child needs, and I want to give him the best education. So this is where I want the dollars and my child to go. Free market economy. And hey, listen, I'm sorry, boo-hoo. The school buildings are empty. Hey, local government, sell the school building, get some money, give it back to the taxpayer. Lower their taxes because now you don't need to pay for the upkeep of that building and hold on to it. So it's a good thing. Free market economy. God bless America.
So, how can we follow you on Friday and the rest of the
They
week?
can Go to southernsense.net, and I'm live on Friday. Easy. If you just go onto X, formerly Twitter, Southern Sense is Southern_Senth, and we broadcast live, and you can see the broadcast also in my feed. So just go there and follow me at Southern_Sense on X.
Thank you for joining in.
Thank you, and God bless.
And we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the show today. We hope you enjoyed it. And if you'd like to send a comment, please do so by sending it to dan@danperkinsmedia.org. And thanks for listening to the show today.